Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, NHK Japan, and Spanish National Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The German foreign minister warned that the arms continue to be sent to Libya, and he also hosted his Saudi counterpart to talk about the United Arab Emirates agreement with Israel. The Brazilian Amazon region has greatly increased wildfires, and new COVID cases in Europe have surged. German Chancellor Merkel welcomed Greta Thunberg to accept a petition demanding stronger action in tackling climate change. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has paid a surprise visit to Libya. Berlin has been trying to broker peace in the country, mired in a civil war since 2011. Maas called the recent lull in fighting, quote, a deceptive calm, and warned that outside powers are still sending arms to Libya.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas hosted his Saudi counterpart today here in Berlin. The two discussed the normalization of relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Saudi Arabia says it will not follow its neighbor in establishing diplomatic ties with Israel until there is an Israeli-Palestinian peace accord. Well, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip burned Israeli flags and images of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at protests over that recent decision to normalize relations between Israel and the UAE. It comes at a time of rising tensions with Palestinian incendiary balloon attacks countered by Israeli airstrikes in Gaza.
Firefighters in Brazil are struggling to contain blazes in the world's largest tropical wetlands. Brazil's Pantanal region has seen a threefold rise in the number of wildfires compared to last year. The marshlands are home to thousands of species unique to the region. Germany has seen just over 1,700 new coronavirus cases in the past 24 hours. It's the highest daily figure since April, when the pandemic was considered to be at its peak. Italy has also posted its highest new caseload since May, when the country emerged from one of the longest lockdowns in the world. Authorities there reported 642 new infections on Wednesday. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has met the climate activist Greta Thunberg in Berlin to discuss the ways to tackle climate change. Merkel welcomed Thunberg to the Chancellery along with other members of the worldwide Fridays for Future movement, including Germany's Luisa Neubauer. While the activists were expected to deliver a petition demanding stronger action from EU leaders to protect the planet, signed by 125,000 people. Germany currently holds the rotating EU presidency and has vowed to make climate policy a central focus. DW political correspondent Nina Haza is following developments outside of the Chancellery in Berlin. So we have Thunberg demanding stronger action, Nina, to protect the planet. What was Merkel's response?
The climate activist said that Angela Merkel was nice and very friendly. And Greta Thunberg said that Angela Merkel was a scientist herself. So the climate activists appreciate the fact that she clearly understands the science behind climate change and is not a climate change denier, for example. But when it comes to translating the science into concrete political action, the climate scientist said, activist said that it's not clear what Germany will do and that it is very hard for Germany to actually manage to bridge that gap that is currently existing between what the science actually demands and what we're doing at the moment. But Angela Merkel apparently promised Greta Thunberg and her fellow climate activists to be a lot braver.
And Germany has the EU Council presidency, that rotating presidency, which is powerful, that does give the platform to be a bit braver. So what's the plan, Nina?
The EU has set itself the goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. Now, that is a very ambitious goal, and Germany indeed has the council presidency at the moment. It's had it since the 1st of July, and it had lots of ambitious plans for big climate summits, etc. But then, of course, the corona pandemic hit, and all those topics were thrown off the agenda, and emergency measures had to be taken to support the countries that are really suffering here in Europe. So the EU is currently working together when it comes to reducing emissions in the big sector of energy and when it comes to big industrial plants. But other than that, it's still very much a national effort to bring emissions down. Germany is on a good track, and of course what it can do is lead by example. It is the bloc's biggest economy. After all, Angela Merkel is an extremely influential figure. And the latest climate protection plan, here the report that was released this week, actually showed that Germany did manage to bring emissions down by 35.7% in 2019. And this is before the corona pandemic actually unfolded here in Europe. So this is something where Germany could come close to reaching its own target this year of reducing emissions by 40%. But then, of course, the next milestone is already waiting. Germany wants to bring emissions down by 55% by 2035, and they can't rely on a pandemic to help them achieve that goal.
Nina Haase outside of the German Chancellery. Thank you.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The Trump administration has finalized plans to open the Arctic National Wildlife Region to oil and fracking operations. Scientists say that record-breaking temperatures and fires around the world, notably in California, are due to global heating, and that the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet. China has sent hundreds of tons of medical supplies to Cuba. China has called on the United States to end its unilateral sanctions against Iran. Countries in the Middle East are outraged and rioting over the recent agreements between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Donald Trump administration has finalized plans to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, one of the world's last pristine wilderness regions, to oil and fracked gas drilling. The Arctic Refuge is rich in biodiversity and has been home to indigenous peoples for thousands of years. The move will allow oil and gas rights to be auctioned off across more than 1.5 million acres of the Arctic Refuge coastal plains. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt is a former oil lobbyist who has been accused of ethics violations and making policy decisions that directly benefited his former clients. In the U.S. state of California, the thermometer in Death Valley hit 130 degrees, which may be the highest temperature ever recorded on Earth. Scientists are working to confirm the reading, but say that the increase in record-breaking temperatures around the world is due to global heating. This comes as California is battling 30 wildfires amid a record-breaking heat wave. In related news, scientists have found that Greenland's ice sheet has shrunk past the point of return, even if global efforts are enacted to slow down the climate catastrophe. The melting of Greenland's ice is steadily pushing sea levels higher, as records show the Arctic is warming at least twice as fast as the rest of the world. One of the authors of the recent study in the journal Nature Communications Earth and Environment said, "Greenland is going to be the canary in the coal mine, and the canary is already pretty much dead at this point." Cuba has received nearly 180 tons of medicines and medical materials from China to guarantee their stable supply in health institutions while making the COVID-19 pandemic fight, a universal fight here in Cuba. According to Ambassador Carlos Miguel Pereira, the supplies were moved from the Shanghai municipality in 30 commercial air shipments. In mid-April, the first charter flight to Cuba with medical products purchased in China departed for Havana with the purpose of strengthening its capacities while fighting the new coronavirus pandemic. Pereira explained that the shipment contained items like masks, protective suits, diagnostic kits, and also sample transport devices, which are key from the point of view of clinical management. China has called on the United States to end its unilateral sanctions against Iran and adopt a correct path towards respecting a multilateral 2015 nuclear agreement between Tehran and the big powers. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Liyan said that the United States needed to abandon unilateralism as well as unilateral sanctions, adopt a responsible and realistic attitude, and return to the right track of observing the nuclear agreement, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and United Nations Security Council decisions. In response to a question about Washington's failed attempt on Friday to extend a UN arms embargo on Iran, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said that most members of the Security Council opposed Washington's wrongdoing, held the view that the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231, which endorses the nuclear deal, should be earnestly preserved and implemented. He said that the voting result once again shows that unilateralism receives no support and bullying will fail. Any attempt to place one's own interest with unilateralism above the common interest of the international community is a dead end. The United Nations Security Council almost unanimously refused to support the U.S.-sponsored draft resolution. Only the Dominican Republic was the only one to vote with the United States for the anti-Iran resolution, leaving it far short of the minimum 9 votes required for adoption. Both Russia and China, both yielding vetoes, voted against the draft resolution. The remaining 11 Security Council members, including France, Germany, and Britain, abstained. Anger is boiling in the Middle East and elsewhere over a recent agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates to normalize diplomatic relations. Palestinian leaders are describing it as a stab in the back by the Arab country. Dozens of people raided the UAE embassy in the Libyan capital city of Tripoli over the weekend to express their outrage over the normalization pact between the Persian Gulf country and Tel Aviv. A number of protesters threw Molotov cocktails at the diplomatic mission, denouncing Abu Dhabi's deal as shameful. Meanwhile, Palestinian ambassador to the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, is returning home, according to the Secretary General of the Central Committee of the Fatah Movement. He has now departed the capital of the United Arab Emirates and is now saying he will never go back to the Persian Gulf Arab country. Various Palestinian factions in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip have roundly condemned the normalization deal between the UAE and the Tel Aviv regime. Across the world, the foreign minister of Luxembourg criticized the deal, suggesting that the United Arab Emirates was selling out the Palestinian cause and abandoning its Palestinian brothers and sisters.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and their download links are fixed and working great. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to NHK Japan. An update on the devastating oil spill in the Indian Ocean from a Japanese-owned tanker near the island of Mauritius. Over 10,000 people took to the streets of Bangkok, Thailand, criticizing the monarchy and calling for parliament to be dissolved and a new constitution written. The Trump administration wants to reimpose the United Nations sanctions against Iran, which were ended in the 2015 accord. NHK Japan.
Now to Mauritius, where authorities have arrested the captain of a Japanese-owned cargo ship that spilled about 1,000 tons of fuel oil into the Indian Ocean. Officials say Sunil Kumar Nandeshwar, who is from India, was arrested along with his Sri Lankan deputy on Tuesday on suspicion of endangering safe navigation. The bulk carrier Wakashio ran aground in late July on a reef off the coast of the island nation. Maritime transport firm Mitsui O.S.K. Lines had chartered the vessel. Maritime traffic data show that the ship made a sudden, almost 90-degree turn to the right and slowed down about 2 kilometers off the coast. Local media say the crew may have maneuvered the ship close to shore to get a Wi-Fi signal. Meanwhile, a second group of experts from Japan is leaving for Mauritius on Wednesday to help reduce the environmental impact. The seven-member team includes experts from the National Institute for Environmental Studies and the Environment Ministry. Earlier this month, the Japanese government sent the first team of experts, including members of the Coast Guard. Japanese private companies are assisting efforts to clean up the waters around Mauritius. This company in Tokyo has developed a special fabric that absorbs surface oil.
The accident took place in a pristine natural environment. It must be very difficult for local residents to have to go through this. We want to offer our help to them.
The company says the material will be sent to Mauritius to assist cleanup efforts. Over 10,000 people took to the streets of Bangkok on Sunday in one of the largest anti-government rallies in Thailand since a coup in 2014. Protesters chanted, "Down with the dictatorship," as they demonstrated against the government of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha. They called for parliament to be dissolved.
The government has been depriving the people of their rights. They've created a lot of legislation to suppress the people.
Prayut led the coup in 2014 before heading an interim government. He became prime minister after a general election last year. The protesters want a new constitution to replace one introduced under the interim government. Some demonstrators spoke openly about the monarchy, an unusual move in a country that has strict laws against insulting the royal family. Anti-government protests have spread across the nation since an opposition party was disbanded in February. The party opposed military involvement in politics. Police arrested some protesters at Sunday's event on charges of sedition. President Donald Trump has announced that Washington will start the process to reimpose UN sanctions against Iran over its nuclear program.
Today, I'm directing the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, to notify the UN Security Council that the United States intends to restore virtually all of the previously suspended United Nations sanctions on Iran. It's a snapback.
The State Department announced that Pompeo will travel to New York on Thursday. Washington accuses Iran of breaching the terms of the nuclear deal. Under the accord reached in 2015 between Iran and six world powers, sanctions were lifted in return for Tehran curbing its nuclear program. The Trump administration wants to restore the sanctions by using the so-called snapback mechanism that was approved with the 2015 deal. The procedure allows for the reintroduction of all UN sanctions in place before the deal if Iran is proved to be in violation of its terms. Washington withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018, while most other countries involved have expressed the intention to keep it alive. Russia and China are among the countries arguing that the U.S. has no right to invoke the snapback since it's no longer party to the deal.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan, which you now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. We will conclude with Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes reports on Belarus. A presidential election was held a week ago, and many citizens and outside powers believe that the results were rigged. In the first few days of protest, some 7,000 people were arrested, many more beaten, shot with rubber bullets, and gassed. Allison gives a concise background of Belarus, Lukashenko, who is generally considered a dictator, and Belarus's strategic importance as NATO marches on the Russian borders. Spanish National Radio.
Since the contested elections in Belarus a week ago Sunday, some 7,000 people have been arrested, hundreds injured, and two killed in the midst of protests. Opponents of President Alexander Lukashenko, who has governed the country for the past 26 years, say he rigged the August 9th election to secure a sixth term in office. The brutal repression of the protesters by riot police, who fired rubber bullets and tear gas canisters into the crowd and charged, chased, and beat hundreds, drew international condemnation. European Union foreign ministers meeting this past Friday considered imposing still harsher sanctions against Belarus. However, hours before, Lukashenko's interior ministry made an unusual apology and released the arrested demonstrators, many of whom have alleged being tortured. Later on Friday, opposition demonstrators formed human chains in peaceful demonstrations, supported by the passing traffic as more and more people joined the protests. The police refrained from repressing these protests and made no more arrests. Lukashenko denies losing the election, citing official results that gave him just over 80% of the vote. Opposition candidate Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya, the wife of an imprisoned opposition politician, fled to Lithuania after the election and from exile has told her followers she was willing to lead the country and call for new elections. Official results had her winning just 10% of the vote. This past Sunday, some 200,000 people marched peacefully through Minsk without meeting police or military repression. Aerial images show a sea of demonstrators in Minsk, which has a population of about 2 million, while smaller demonstrations took place in other cities throughout the nation of 9.5 million inhabitants. In addition to growing tired of the leader of what U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice called Europe's last true dictatorship in 2005, demonstrators are protesting against inequality in Belarus and also incompetence. Lukashenko, like Trump in the United States and Bolsonaro in Brazil, called COVID-19 a flu and then a hoax until he himself became ill with the coronavirus shortly before the election. As growing numbers of protesters express their opposition to Lukashenko on the street, workers in factories and in other sectors called a general strike. Striking workers are demanding new elections, the sacking of Belarus officials involved in the violent crackdown, and the release from prison of people they say are political prisoners. Belarus, unlike its neighbor Russia, never embraced the gangster capitalism of the oligarchs after the fall of the Soviet Union, and instead has maintained most of the state-run Soviet-style economy already in place. One analyst speculates that Lukashenko hoped to benefit by claiming a nefarious Russian plot and in that way to get carte blanche from the West. That, however, did not happen. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo recently said Washington was following the situation in Belarus and that one of the aims of his trip last week to Central Europe was to, quote, try to help as best we can the Belarusian people achieve sovereignty and freedom. Pompeo was speaking in Warsaw, Poland, where he discussed defense cooperation and a new bilateral accord on developing Poland's nuclear power program, among other things. Poland and the U.S. signed a defense pact which sees the number of U.S. troops in Poland rise to at least 5,000. The deal also involves training Polish forces in reconnaissance and command, with the possibility of more U.S. troops coming to Poland in a case of an increased threat. Poland could host almost immediately 20,000 American troops if needed. The Polish defense minister said the presence of the U.S. troops is key for Poland's deterrence and defense, since Poland is, he said, quote, closer to the potential source of conflict. For Belarus, Russia is its main and most important trade partner, even though relations have not always been particularly good. Tensions with Moscow have run high since 2014, when Lukashenko backed the pro-NATO coup in Kiev, Ukraine. Earlier this year, a prolonged dispute emerged between Russia and Belarus over Russian subsidies for oil deliveries. On Sunday, the Belarusian Defense Ministry announced plans to hold military drills in the western region of Grodno, not far from the country's new nuclear power plant. The military drills are being held on Belarus's border with Poland and Lithuania. Lukashenko has tried to balance between NATO and Moscow for decades. But he said earlier that he was concerned with the NATO military exercises being conducted in Poland and Lithuania, where NATO has some permanent well-armed bases. Reuters reports that NATO dismissed the allegations by Lukashenko, but said it was closely monitoring the situation following his contested re-election. And from another Reuters report, Russia is watching closely as Belarus hosts pipelines that carry Russian energy exports to the West and is viewed by Moscow as a buffer zone against NATO. Russia has said it has no intention of attacking NATO and accuses the alliance of destabilizing Europe. The 5,000 U.S. troops that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just promised to Poland come in addition to the NATO troops already stationed there. Poland is one of the few NATO countries that meets the 2% spending benchmark. When the U.S. defense chief announced a plan to withdraw American soldiers from Germany this spring and partially redistribute them around Europe, he alluded to locating some of them in existing European facilities in Belgium and Italy, and also in the new projects in Poland. Since the collapse of the former Soviet Union, NATO has moved its forces, bases, and weaponry eastward, closer and closer to Russia's borders, in the Baltic countries, Poland, and other Eastern European countries, down to Bulgaria and up to Estonia. And since 2016, the U.S. Army has been rotating an armored combat team to Eastern Europe.
That report by Allison Hughes was from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.